Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Yo, 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 yo. I'm back. It's Jamie here in your ears with the Queer Family Podcast bonus episode. Yeah, yeah, yeah. How are you all? I'm doing well. It is still so weird to be doing these intros all by myself. I feel like I should have somebody answering back to me. So now I'm just going to start answering back to myself. Oh, Lord, help a girl out. She's starting to lose it. So listen, if you haven't been listening these past 2 weeks, I have been releasing bonus episodes of past guests, archived episodes of the folks who are going to be coming in to help me in season 11 to introduce our new episodes. And I have one more for you today. But before I get to that, I just want to let y'all know that season 11 drops on Monday. Monday, season 11 drops. 11 freaking seasons. I can't even believe it's happened. But you know why it happened? Because all of you keep listening and you keep reaching out and you keep wanting to tell your stories. That's why it's freaking happening. But so season 11 drops Monday. It's a bomb episode. My good friend Teek, who you probably just listened to recently, comes in to help me with the intro for that one. And it's a really great episode. Can't wait for you all to hear it. But before that, you have to get reacclimated with my friend Liam. Liam was from season 9, episode 21, so not that long ago. The episode was titled Queer Conception. And in this episode, this is the episode description, Liam talks about their large blended family transitioning from she to they and starting testosterone, and their new book, Queer Conception, The Complete Fertility Guide for Queer and Trans Parents to Be. This episode was great. I learned a lot in it, and I think you all will too. And Liam's out there doing the good work, like this podcast is trying to do, like so many of our guests try to do, change the system, get rid of old ways, normalize our families, our bodies, our lives. And I'm still working hard to do it. I'll tell you what, I'm gonna be real for a second. I've been working really, really, really hard for this rebrand. I got the new name. I got the new logo. I got the new website. Go to thequeerfamilypodcast.com. Check it out. I got the new theme song. It's all coming together beautifully. So many wonderful people have gathered around me to help me with this. But I still some days have really rough days. Like I'm having a rough day right now thinking I'm doing all this. And it's not, what if it doesn't get the traction I want? What if we still can't get past this quote unquote niche world we're stuck in when it comes to mainstream media? And my whole goal is to just get our families out there and normalize the shit out of them because we're fucking beautiful. And anyway, those are my thoughts. It's like a roller coaster from day to day. I get afraid that it's not going to work out. And then other days I think this shit is bomb and we're going and we're doing it. And that's the roller coaster I'm on right now. And so I wanted to clue you all into it so you could have an idea of what's going on in my head, my crazy head. But I'm going to do an experiment right now with y'all. All of you who are listening, and there's a lot of you. There's a lot of you listening right now. All of y'all who are listening, stop what you're doing. Go into your podcast app. Go into the review section and write a positive review for this Lil Hair podcast. I would be so happy. This is my experiment. I want to see how many positive reviews we get just from this episode, from me asking you to do that. And I know I ask you to do so much, but this is it. This is all I'm asking you to do this week. I promise. Except, you know, go see all the social media and my new website, thequeerfamilypodcast.com. Okay, that's it. I got to get off this thing because I've been talking too long and I need to bring Liam in, like Liam's actually here. But Helen's going to roll this tape. We're going to keep going. Tune in on Monday. Really wonderful episode coming at you. I can't wait to share it. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but just know it's bomb AF. I don't even know why I'm speaking like the kids today because I'm not a kid and we all know it. Anyway, okay, Helen's telling me to shut up because this is too much. All right, Helen, please roll the tape. Beulah, you too. Yes, you can both press the button. That's fine. Just both press the button, ladies. Okay. Love is
love is love is love. This episode is brought to you by Zoller. We thank you for making our show a possibility. Thank you, Zoller. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride, if he's not an Alvarez, good talk, you would say. I'm excited. Hey, AJ.
Are you excited?
I'm excited. I can barely contain myself.
Why are you excited, E?
Well, I'll tell you what you already know, but I'll tell you guys. America. Boom, 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 America. We're having a live event. Oh, boom. Yes, we are. Yes. So mark your calendars for June 23rd, NYC Pride's The Conference at New York Law School in Tribeca.
You guys, we are doing a live event for Pride. This just came to us. It's very last minute.
Boom.
We are super excited, super. But you got to get your tickets ASAP. Now, because it's happening this week.
Absolutely. Oh my God. It's an annual symposium of transformative change makers in the queer community.
That's us.
It's a full day of powerful conversations, networking opportunities, interactive workshops, and a lot more. There's probably going to be merch and giveaways and stuff.
All kinds of stuff.
And
all kinds of stuff.
Our listeners.
Queer people everywhere.
Get a special discount. What's the fan code, Jay?
We made sure y'all could get a discount. Here's your code. It's OCT15. 15% off all conference tickets. So you get 15% off. So if you're in the New York City area, you're coming here for Pride, you need to join us for our live event and taping.
Where should they go to get this information?
Okay, so you guys are going to go to the events page on the nycpride.org website, or you're going to click the link that we are posting all over social media, or the link in the show notes of this here episode. And then you're going to select your ticket type. You're going to click register, and then you're going to enter your coupon code OCT15 on the next page. It's super exciting. I can't wait. I'm also slightly nervous that nobody will show up. So show up, y'all.
Oh, God. People are going to totally show up. You want to see us live? You actually want to see us, right? And have a conversation or ask questions and be a part of this live moment?
Come talk to us.
Be a part of this.
Before we talk about our guests, I want to tell you something, E.
Tell me.
I, for the first time.
Oh, my gosh.
went to an actual barber. I needed to get my sides done. I needed to get my sides cleaned up. And I've never gone to a barber for that. It was really scary. Actually, I did go to the barber once when I was 8 because I wanted to get my hair cut at the same place my brother got it. And the barber said, the only way I will cut your hair is if you agree to cut it like a boy. And I ruminated on it for like 6 months. And finally I said, okay, let's do it. And I cut my hair like a boy so that I could get my hair cut at the barber. But that's a whole other story.
Okay, first of all, I have to interject here and say it is super cute. Now, you can't see Jay's hair right now, but it is dope as fuck. The fade to it. Look, wait, no, turn your head back to the side. Can you make sure you put this picture right here? Snap. Wait, I'm going to snap it. Go back. I'm going to take this picture. We're going to take this picture, and you're going
to
see.
That's the thing. I don't know what to tell the barber because they talk in different words than I'm used to.
You say
so
fade.
I was like, well, that's what I said. I said, I don't know. I want to, you know, like do this, you know, buzz the sides. And like, can you do like a fade kind of thing? Is that the right term?
Yes.
And he was like, you know, he's a man of very few words. Anyway.
Yeah. It's,
that
it's
happened.
Super cute.
I went to the barber and I feel super lesbian. And it's cool. I was sitting in that chair like he knows I'm a fucking lesbian.
Wow. Isn't that interesting how our hair means like lesbian for us? I also am very conscious of not having non-queer hair. Like I want my hair to represent my queerness and I work hard to make sure that it does. I don't want to look non-queer. Is that weird?
You don't want to look basic. I don't want to look basic.
I don't want to be a basic bitch. Isn't that what they say?
Nope. I don't want to be a basic bitch. No basic bitches around here.
I'm so
We're
sad.
We're just living that queer life. So, okay, let's do this. All right,
this guest, Liam. Mm. Liam is a parent of 4, and as is usually the case with our families, they've got a pretty amazing story of how their family came to be.
Sure do. Liam has also been a licensed midwife for years, and they made it their goal to help and support members of our community realize their family dreams, which makes us love them even more.
They even wrote a book that has way more science and expertise in it than some books.
Than my book?
I didn't want to say that. It's called, Liam's book is called Queer Conceptions, The Complete Fertility Guide for Queer and Trans Parents to Be. The book is tremendous. Liam is great.
Yeah. Let's just bring Liam in because Liam can explain things way better than we ever can. And Liam doesn't ramble like we do either.
All right.
Helen is like, shut it and let's go. Your hair is basic and I don't care. I don't know. I just made her really New York. Okay. Roll the tape, Helen. Roll the tape, please. Thank you. Hi, Liam.
Hi, Liam.
Hi there.
Nice to meet you.
Yes.
It's so good to be here. Great to be here with you both.
It is wonderful to have you. We got a lot to talk about. I'm very excited. So before we get into anything, why don't we just jump right into that elevator pitch? Let's let our listeners know who you are, Liam, and why you're here.
I'm going to count you in. I don't even know any more languages, so I can't do it anymore. So 1, 2, 3, action.
All right. I am Kristen Liam Colley. I'm going by Liam these days. A lot of people know me as Kristen Colley. I am a licensed midwife and fertility specialist, and my practice is built around queer and trans family building. And covers the entire childbearing process from thinking about having a baby, conceiving through pregnancy and into early parenthood.
Love it. Boom.
Wow, you did it.
You did it.
Good.
You know what you do for a living very well.
Timing is everything.
Yeah.
I also had this vibe just in meeting you. I'm like, I want Aaron and I to use Liam or to work with Liam in this baby process.
Oh.
I just instantly trust you. Your face, there's something so, you've heard this before. I'm not saying anything new.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it translates through the computer.
Well, interestingly enough, when I listen to your podcast, it's hard for me to listen to it because almost every family that comes on there, I'm like, oh, but they just need to know. They need to know this or that, or I could help them so much. But, you know, it's something you recorded a long, long time ago. And a lot of people have already been through their process. But, you know, you hear these stories of the struggles that people go through and just the ways that our round families are trying to fit in the square hole of what is available mainstream around fertility and conception. And there's so much that's left out.
Heteronormative square.
Yes.
Mold.
Yeah.
Could you give an example of, I don't mean from our podcast, like, but can you give an example of something that you think, oh, they if only they had known, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sure. Here's an example. So, you know, queer couple, they want to make a baby. They go into their local fertility clinic and they have to pay for a bunch of lab tests that are not appropriate for somebody who has no infertility history, no concerns. Right. And they're offered ultrasounds and trigger mm-hmm. shots and medications mm-hmm. that we're just now starting to get some actual literature that's designed around donor insemination populations that say that you do not increase your chances by starting with medication.
Mm.
And that the way that timing of insemination is done in an infertility clinic is either they tell you to pee on your OPK mm-hmm. once a day and come in the day after you're positive for your insemination,
mm-hmm.
Or they're doing ultrasounds and a trigger shot. Mm-hmm. And both of those approaches can fail you. The ultrasound and trigger shot has the risk of having you inseminate too late, because if your body was just about to release that egg when you got your ultrasound, it's not going to wait because you got the shot.
Right.
Some people end up missing the whole cycle because the mm-hmm. day of their ultrasound, they go in and it's already happened. So that's going to cost you time, going to cost you money. And even if they're just doing the OPK method and they tell you, you know, come in the day after you're positive, the egg only lives for 12 to 16 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And when sperm have been frozen and they're placed inside the uterus, they only reliably live for maybe 24 hours, but their mm-hmm. actual, you know, period of time when they're actually functional and could fertilize an egg is more like that 12 to 16 hour window that is the lifespan of the egg. So you're trying to hit a 12 hour window
mm-hmm.
by testing your urine only every 24 hours and assuming that everybody ovulates 24 to 36 hours after they're positive, and it's not true. So this person who's gone into the clinic in an environment and an approach that's not even oriented towards their clinical situation, let alone their social situation of, you know, being a queer family. And then mm-hmm. there's all these like straight white people on the walls.
All over.
Yeah.
And the one token queer couple.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But also white. And so the way that I work with people to identify their ovulation pinpoints ovulation within about 12 hours by things that you can observe on your own at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a number of clients who were timing their inseminations way earlier than they ever would have been timed in a fertility clinic. And these folks are getting pregnant on first or second cycle. And it's because we're following the timing that their own body has. And I am positive that if these folks had gone in the next day to inseminate, they wouldn't have gotten pregnant. They would have thrown their money down the drain, all however many cycles it took them to end up doing IVF. And by then you're spending tens of thousands of dollars.
The first doctor my ex and I went to, we were doing the basal body temperature, and, you know, we didn't have kits. We just had the thermometer and a little piece of paper, a little pad that we made up, and we were writing everything down. And his estimations just did not make sense with our tracking. And we kind of blew it off because we said, you know what? We're not doctors. Obviously, he knows something that I don't. But actuality, he didn't know. So we had transferred doctors because we were like, this feels wrong.
Yeah.
Something, we can't be this far away.
Yeah.
And we're testing everything, the cervical fluid and we read everything. Mm-hmm. So
I want to say, Liam, you're touching upon a theme that comes up with our families over and over and over again, is the frustration that we go through when we go to these clinics and we're automatically treated like an infertile straight couple, which we are not. And so many couples have said that to us in this mm-hmm. show. And also, I went through almost 3 years of infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I needed you. I think you're right. I think that it was not timed right. They weren't listening to my body.
Mm-hmm.
which is like really freaking frustrating. But I didn't know any better. Right. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And it's thousands of dollars.
Oh my God.
Down the drain.
I spent over $50,000 to make my more probably through the 3 years. So everybody needs. So anyway, the lesson in the story, everybody needs a Liam.
Yeah, for real. Like, I'm like, can Liam come back every once in a while?
God, and Liam, we just ask questions. You become our in-house
midwife.
We can
take callers.
I'd love that. I could do it.
Oh my God, that would be so cool.
Let's do it.
Hey, I'm Trevor Campbell, and you made me queer. Oh, I never get tired of saying that. I'm so excited because my podcast, You Made Me Queer, is back for its second season. Every episode, I invite a hilarious LGBTQIA plus guest to point the finger of blame at who and or what made them queer. And I've had some very vindictive guests, like the Great Canadian Baking Show's Colin Asuncion.
She's like, FYI, I'm the only one here who knows how to read.
CBC's Because News host, Gavin Crawford.
Proudly wandering around me like, yeah, it's our gang, the Thoroughly Modern Millies.
The Bedpost Podcast's Aaron Pym.
Early Disney, they were drawing women with dump truck asses.
RuPaul's Drag Race's Jinx Monsoon.
I remember being a little child and thinking, I would do that.
CBC's Chosen Family co-host, Trenna Winter.
Being an old soul means you're a deeply traumatized person.
And welcome to The Dollhouse and The Princess Diaries, Heather Matarazzo.
I mean, if he had a dick, he could suck it.
New episodes are released every other Thursday on the Sonar Network. So put on your best powdered wig or whatever jury members wear nowadays and stop on by our House of Justice, where the AC is usually broken and the category is always red hot queer retribution. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, remember, we're here, we're queer, and it's your fault.
Before we go more into all your amazing information and facts that you have that I think we all need to learn and hear, I want to talk about your family because you also have four children. And I would love to hear the story of how your family was formed.
Okay. Well, let's see. When I graduated from college, 1994, I was pregnant. Didn't know it. Mm-hmm. Didn't plan it. Oops.
Oh. Oops.
Was not out yet. And I went through that pregnancy, and I would say within about 4 months of being a new parent, you know, when you go through childbirth, at least for me, it was so deeply affirming about what my body could do. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was really the personal growth that I experienced through that process was just massive. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you become a parent, that intersects with every aspect of identity you walk through the world with. So it didn't take me long in that process to realize, I'm actually queer. And I was with my daughter's dad. So, you know, we'd made this baby, we're staying together, we're doing this. And then by the time my kiddo was two, I was like, okay, I gotta come out. Like, this is not working.
Can't push it down anymore.
Yeah, I had what at the time felt like a very late coming out. And, you know, you live and you learn and you realize people come out at all different times in their life. So my experience as a parent of a young child was, you know, simultaneous with my coming out process. And so her dad and I split, and I decided to move out to Seattle and go to midwifery school when she was five. And by the time I was in my last year of midwifery school, I met my ex-partner, and she had three kids. Her kids had a little gap in age, and mine fit right in there. We were like the queer Brady Bunch where, you know, it all fit together. And her kids had been conceived. Each child conceived differently. She had originally conceived our oldest with two gay men. And then she had been partnered with somebody else, and she and her ex had each carried a child. So the oldest has kind of, one genetic donor, but had two donor dads.
Two donor dads and your ex. And they co-parented together.
And then ultimately then her partner as well. Wow. And then my child that I gave birth to, ended up with my ex, three new siblings, plus me, plus her dad's partner.
Oh my God.
And then the next kiddo, he has me and my ex and her ex. And then the youngest was conceived with a known donor. And within my first year, I mean, you know, we U-hauled it. So like within the first year of our relationship, when I was living there and had moved my entire family in, we came home one day and this guy's sleeping on our couch. And I mean, we had an open door policy. But yeah. her known donor, who she had chosen because he was a world traveler and, like, you know, just peripheral involvement, he showed up at our house and he ended up living with us for like 2 or 3 years and remodeled our kitchen.
The youngest donor.
And wow. That person is in my book, who I thank for putting me in a boat off the coast of Alaska to start writing the book. It's him. Mm. So we have this, like, every kid has a different situation and they live all over the country now. The 30-year-old is in Portland, the 27-year-old is in Seattle, the 23-year-old is in DC, and the 21-year-old splits his time between Maui and Wyoming. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know, I had to get a cat so that somebody would need me to feed them.
Yeah, like how you have empty nest syndrome now. Yeah. Talk about new traditional family.
Right? Yeah.
Look at you breaking
the mold. How does everybody get along? Or do you get together for big family holidays?
Yeah, what does Thanksgiving look like?
You know, it looks different year to year because the kids have so many parents. And right. So I do not envy, you know, it was hard enough for me with, like, just my mom and dad had split, right? And mm-hmm. what do I do mm-hmm. around holidays? And my kids have so many parents. It's mm-hmm. like getting everybody together is really difficult to do. And they are all so, like, four individual human beings could not be more different. They're so different from one another. And each and every one of them so committed to each other as siblings.
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah.
That is magical.
Yeah. Yeah. And when Brad, our donor friend, lived with us, the condition was like, yeah, we love you. You know, let's see how this works. But the, you know, main kind of ground rule was don't treat any of the kids any differently than you treat the one who biologically is connected to you. And he was completely down with that and just loved all of the kids equally and interacted with them. And, you know, I mean, yeah, my youngest was totally his doppelganger, you know, going around like, oh, there's a mini Brad. You know, like that was very clear, but nobody calls him dad. You know, he's Brad.
Right. Yeah. Right. Even your youngest is,
yes.
he's Brad.
Yeah.
That is beautiful.
I have so many questions. It's gorgeous. Yeah. I don't even know where to, I have one question. When you came out, mm-hmm. this is my first of many, many. When you came out, were you using the pronouns they, them? Or is that something that your beautiful, large family had to walk through with you?
I was not using they, them. I've always identified as a mother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that time, we didn't even have the word non-binary. It was genderqueer. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was definitely
we're in the same time.
Yeah.
47 over here. So.
Yeah, 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 exactly. So that was the kind of label if somebody asked. I mean, my kids either know me as Mom or Kristen, right? Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of Mama in there with the youngest. He was 3 when we got together, but mostly Kristen. I think I started using they, them a handful of years ago, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And I started testosterone about 9 months ago. Perimenopause, you know, had me in its grip, and everything I could read about perimenopause was so feminized. I just couldn't see myself reflected in it at all. Mm-hmm. Big plug for Heather Corinna's book, What Fresh Hell Is This?
Oh, I gotta book put that on menopause. My list.
Yeah, Heather is non-binary and includes, I think it's like a 2-page spread on trans and non-binary menopause.
Awesome.
Yeah, like the only inclusive book out there about menopause. Oh. And she's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Heather is fantastic. They are fantastic.
I misgender myself because it's been 47 years plus, you know, that I've had to pick one because there was only 2 choices and they just decided, hey, we're picking this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I am still adjusting and I've always felt like a mom. Mm-hmm. And a wife. So So I'm learning mm-hmm. where it matters to me. Like, I don't like to be she'd, but sometimes I she myself, and we're working on it. And I have patience because I've stopped. I don't know. And I would love to know, did you feel a sense of, like you made jokes. I made a lot of jokes. Like my kid, we would make jokes. And I said, I'm they, them, you know, they, them, it, ha, ha, we laugh and stuff. And I was like, I got to stop making jokes. This is literally not funny. And it's important to me. Mm-hmm. How was that process? Or did you, how was that process?
My kids are very much queer and enculturated. Mm-hmm. And one of my kids is trans. And they've been surrounded by the type of work that I do and the type of work their other parent does, which is all around trans and queer stuff. And they were also older, right? My age range now is 21 to 30. So, you know, the kids were all old enough, you know, the kids are all right. Like they're the ones having like 60 gender markers on Facebook. And, you know, my kids correct me. Just the other day, I remember what I was talking about. My daughter was like, Mom, that was some binary thinking. What are you doing? Okay.
Right.
It's a process. And I think a takeaway for me here is it's not just a process for those of us who have to get used to someone else's pronouns changing and things like that. It's a process for the person going through it as well, because you have lived your entire life a certain way and you have to get used to that new self too. And it's constantly evolving as well, like we all are.
And going through a sort of puberty, because you said you just started tea 9 months ago. Are you okay? Tell me all about it.
This is like a kid in a candy shop.
I feel like, yes, it is, because I want to start. I'm terrified, but it's because of the beard situation. Quick recap. Yeah. I really want a full beard so bad. And I'm afraid that my family's genes will make me have little spriggets.
Oh, no.
And I'll be I'm just so scared.
Oh, I hear you on that one.
How are you feeling on the tea?
I feel great. And what I want to say is, you know, you don't just transition. It's like you come to awareness about parts of yourself that you had to put away or put aside in order to function in the world. And so it's not like you just, I mean, maybe some people do turn on a dime, but my experience is you're sorting it out midway, yet you're in relationship to people. And we have these things called words and pronouns. And so you're trying to navigate your own self-knowing and manifestation while at the same time communicating that to people that you love or even just that you meet. And so, you know, it's really tricky. There's no right way to do it, but just remembering that it is a process and it takes as long as it takes and it starts where it starts and it ends where it ends.
I think that's the part that's hard for me. The age thing, because you said you're about to be 50 and you started tea 9 months ago. So that puts you and I really close to a journey, right? And because where are other of us that I don't know, but you're here. So I feel like you're here for me. Thank you so much, Jamie.
Absolutely.
How do you reconcile some things at this age? Because the age thing, tell me about it.
Well, my body was transitioning whether I liked it or not.
Yeah.
And I have walked through the world perceived female mostly. When I was a little kid, I could pass and I loved it. And I cried the day that I realized I was getting boobs, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to pass anymore and get, you know, get people to see me for who I am. So I just thought, well, I've walked, you know, if I should live to be 100, then I've lived half my life being perceived primarily as female. So why the hell not? This is just a bag of skin and bones that I've only got for a few more years and then I'm dead. So like, you know, the kind of bodily integrity piece of it. And like, as somebody who I went through a pregnancy, I was deeply transformed by the experience of giving birth. I found my power as a human being, and obviously found my calling in the process as well. But I have a deep reverence for the body and for what bodies who can conceive and harbor and grow and give birth to new life. Like, we're special, you know, we've got something pretty cool going on in these bodies that we were gifted. And that's beyond gender, you know, but But still, you walk around in the body you were given. And guess what? We have science and we have medicine, and we can utilize medicine to make our lives better. And I will tell you, in answer to one of the questions you asked a minute ago, E, about what that was like for me starting testosterone, it was like this entire set of self-policing I was doing in order to fit in with what was expected of me as a perceived female person. I could feel, even just in the very, very beginning of it, like those guardrails are gonna fall to the wayside, and I'm not gonna have to function that way anymore. And even now, I am planning to have chest surgery, but I haven't yet. And this chest gives me away because it's sizable. But just like if I'm wearing like big clothes and I've got a lower voice and I reach out to shake somebody's hand and introduce myself as Liam, I'm perceived as male. And it is such a breath of fresh air. I mean, there was also a piece of like, oh God, now I'm like perceived as being part of rape culture. Right?
Right. Oh. Because that's a reckoning.
Right?
Huh? Right.
Like, oh, you can't just take the parts of masculinity that feel affirming. Like there's a whole, you know, 49% of the population that have a different set of expectations in the world. And a lot of it's really shitty. Oh, I should watch my potty mouth. I don't know what our guidelines are.
Okay, you don't have to watch any potty mouth.
So, you know, it's a mixed bag, you know, and like there are probably like conversations I could have with somebody on the street, perceived female, that I won't be able to have anymore.
Right. Things change.
You know, about motherhood or parenthood or sex or whatever. Like, I mean, y'all can tell. I'll dive deep and just talk to anybody about anything.
Today's episode is sponsored by Zoller. And so, E, I have to ask you, how are you and Aaron doing with that baby making?
Oh, listen, let me tell you. Of course you're going to ask me that. Mm-hmm. We're still in the infancy stages. Get it? Infancy stages. But, you know, she's ready. I'm old, you know.
You are old. It's true, E. But that doesn't mean you can't make a cute little LGBTQ baby. That's the beauty of having two uteruses.
Well, mine is not on the auction block anymore, but hers, no. Absolutely.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you should use Zoller to do it. Zoller offers a most complete and comprehensive prenatal vitamin, which includes 300 milligrams of DHA, the active formula of folate, which is important, bioactive B vitamins, chromium, also important, lutein, and a whole lot more. That is all important stuff. I know because I took a whole bunch of them when I was trying to get pregnant.
It is important stuff. And we have very cute boxes and everything that Zoller delivered to us that Erin has started popping the pills in those little cute. It's really well packaged. She has started taking their prenatal vitamins with DHA in it. So she seems happy and they don't seem difficult to take. So there's that.
Well, this is very exciting. We are going to make yet another baby on If These Overs Could Talk.
Oh my gosh. I can't breathe. I love that you're just asserting yourself into our business. And I'm happy about it because I feel like you're a younger parent and you can hop in and do certain things that my knees just won't let me do anymore.
Right. Well, I don't know if I'm going to help you with that, but I am invested now and we are going to make this happen. This is good.
I'm glad someone is invested and ready.
Okay. So guys, with Zoller Prenatal, you can rest assured that you're providing you and your baby with the best you deserve.
Yep. And they have an offer that is exclusively for If These Ovaries Could Talk. Fans, listen, I'm sure some of you are out there in the baby making process, right? So all you have to do is use code PREDHA25, that's PREDHA25, on Zoller Prenatal DHA at Amazon.com at your checkout, and you will save 25% off your purchase. Come on, y'all. 25% off, that's huge.
Yeah, it's true. And we're making so many babies.
So many
babies. Just going to use code PREDHA25 on Zoller Prenatal DHA at Amazon.com. Checkout for 25% off your purchase. It's Zahler is how you spell Zoller, by Zoller. The way.
Boom. You said midwifery, correct?
Midwifery is the correct pronunciation.
Mm-hmm. It's so gendered. And I was going to ask, is that an issue for you at times?
You know, I thought about that. I thought long and hard about it a few years ago when I had a transition in my practice. And the meaning of the word is with women, right? And obviously the folks I'm with are not all women.
Right.
But midwifery as a, not even just a profession, but as a role among human communities and groupings, we are social animals and we reproduce, we procreate. And right. midwives have existed throughout time around the world. And, you know, you go to an international midwifery conference and there are just like most other countries, midwives care for pregnant folks. And that's just how it is. It's different here in the US. So I really believe in upholding what midwifery represents worldwide across cultures, but especially in the United States, midwives are marginalized. And, you know, even when you think about getting pregnant, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to go to the doctor. Well, guess what? You know, you wouldn't go to a surgeon if you just needed a pap or had a UTI. Then that's like pretty much the same thing that you're doing. Like there are care providers who are so much better suited to uncomplicated clinical pictures and take the time and hold the space to hold the other aspects, the relational aspects, the personal growth aspects, the emotional aspects that are not part of that clinical care, which also kind of goes back to your question too, Jamie, about like, okay, so what's missing in that fertility clinic model, you know? And it's that you're only receiving this clinical care, but you don't just like, you don't just have a pregnancy, you have a baby.
Right.
And you don't just give birth, you become a parent. And so that's massive. So I have continued using the word midwife because I honor the profession while at the same time recognize that I am deeply marginalized within my profession. I just am holding space. I'm literally the placeholder for what I want midwifery to become and how I'm hoping that queer and trans folks access midwives in their family building process, because I think midwives have a ton to offer. And that's the other thing that I do as a big part of my work is I train midwives to do what I do.
That's one of the things that the African-American community wasn't able to transition into the hospital system. And so it was part of our heritage to use midwifery until like the early part of the 70s.
Yeah.
And then you see the mortality rates
on
African-American parents.
Yep.
Woo!
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes.
And now it's like getting the community back into it because we left it. So this is awesome.
Right.
Yeah. Just so you know, I feel so strongly that we need more Black midwives that I do a 50% discount for BIPOC midwives to go through my course. Cause I just want to get it out there. Yeah.
My That's wife amazing. Wants to go into nursing. I found our midwife. She just walked in. I have our midwife right here, just so you know. She doesn't do camera. Sorry.
I want to say I didn't know getting a midwife was an option.
Wasn't. There's not very many people who do what I do.
Well, I have a friend who gave birth the same time I did, but we went the same route we did when my wife got pregnant with our oldest, which was 4 years prior. And so we went the same route with me. We did the same exact thing.
Right.
But my friend who got pregnant at the same time as me used a midwife service. Like it was.
Oh, for the pregnancy, you mean?
For the pregnancy and the birth and the. But yes, and I didn't know it was an option for getting pregnant either. So
right, that's what I meant, that very few midwives do conception, donor insemination. And those who do tend to just like, yeah, I'll do IUI for you, but they don't know what you actually need to know to really midwife somebody through the process. And that verb, midwifing them through, means caring for the clinical aspects and the non-clinical aspects. It's a holistic model
it's
of care.
Holistic. It should be holistic.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be Earth Mama while I was pregnant and Earth Mama when I had a newborn, and no, none of the above. None of the above. I needed help.
Doula, midwife. What's the difference?
A doula is a non-clinical care provider. To become a doula, you take a weekend workshop.
Right.
And you can take more weekend workshops too, to, you know, okay, embellish your practice. To become a midwife, it is a graduate level education. I was in school. I did part-time because I was a single parent. And I think I got through in 4.5 years.
That's not bad.
As a midwife, I'm equipped to care for people throughout pregnancy, deliver their babies outside the hospital. So I'm kind of the equivalent, you know, of an OBGYN, where a doula is the equivalent of a massage therapist.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
Big difference.
Big, huge difference. Yeah. You both have an experience that I have to tell you I covet. I did not get to push life out of myself or get it cut out or any kind of way do. And I always have a moment of,
well, you know? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's okay. It's just a moment of, I'm the minority. Wait, that sounds crazy, because now I just figured that out, right? Yeah. So it's nice to be in the room and hear this, because I used to pretend that I was the one who gave birth to my son. Mm-hmm. When people would say, oh, how long were you in labor? And if he wasn't around, I was like, oh gosh, it was only 10 hours. I really didn't use drugs. No epidural, pushed that baby out. I took my ex-wife's pregnancy story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I made amends. I fixed it. I told the truth eventually. But I felt bad.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a bio story.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is everything in the, you know, in the broader culture is so organized around cis hetero couples that there's no place for a non-gestational parent.
Exactly.
And so, you know, you go into the medical appointments and they're talking to your partner the whole time. Nobody even looks at you, let alone asking how you feel about anything. And there's kind of no place for you in the doctor's office or in the culture. Like, there's no blank for you on the birth certificate form. You know, in some states it'll say parent, but you'll still get your birth certificate back and it'll say mother and father.
That happened to me.
That's a huge part.
Yeah, they don't know that in many cases like ours, there's a loss. One person might be very well dealing with a loss. I'm a non-bio and a bio mom. Mm-hmm. I definitely experienced that loss. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
And you're right, Liam. There's no space for that in this heteronormative world. Mm-hmm. There's no acknowledgement. It's not even on the radars. Why would they think anything of that?
Right.
You know?
You're not providing gametes, so.
Right.
Chopped liver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I really think we could talk all night long about every single theme that comes up for our families. But here's the thing, and I think here's a promise. If Liam has time, we're bringing Liam back. We're going to figure out ways. If Liam has time, I really do want to bring you back, Liam, and have you as kind of one of our experts, because
I'd be so down. Yeah.
We know that we are not experts. Okay. So Liam, let's talk about this book.
Okay.
Yes.
Why'd you write this book?
Well, as we have experienced in this conversation, there's a lot that people don't know, don't understand, a lot of needs that are unmet. Mm-hmm. And gosh, I just feel like I should apologize for taking so long to do it. Because I want people to be held. I want people to have the information they need. I want people to not waste their money in models of care that don't serve them. Mm-hmm. And I want people to feel supported and affirmed and, you know, all along the process to have the non-gestational parent spoken to and acknowledged as a vital member of the family. And these are all things that, although we may struggle with it individually, collectively, they're things that we all know. And once we get in a room together, we just like, oh yeah, okay, there's shared experience here.
Yes.
And so we can have this conversation. So my goal in writing this book was, you know, ultimately to make the world a better place and to raise the platform for what we expect for ourselves and what we expect from our care providers around conception and family building.
This is exactly why this podcast was started. This is exactly why we wrote the book we wrote, because there was a void of these kinds of conversations anywhere.
And I got to say, as the person on the other side of it, they save lives, because I was almost not here because there was no information 12 years ago with how I was feeling when my then wife was pregnant or gave birth, there was no information. And it was horrifying to feel like I was so broken and the only one with this journey. Yeah. This wasn't talked about. So this podcast, your book, the work you're doing in the world, I believe the work all three of us is doing in the world is literally saving someone's life. We don't know who, we may never.
And no information and no affirmation. I want to add that, right? This is, okay, we're going to let you talk, Liam. Just take, take the floor, Liam. This is so important. And I can't believe that we can count on one hand, maybe two hands, the amount of resources that are out there for us still.
Right.
So take the floor, Liam.
What do you want me to talk about?
I want you to be a call. Can we do a call in? One day we should do a call in. Like, because I'm sure people have questions for Liam as well. Maybe writing your questions, folks. And when we have Liam back, we can answer some of the...
I'd love to answer the questions.
Writing your questions while you're listening to this episode and send them right over to ovariestalk@gmail.com.
All right.
And we will bring Liam back. But okay, Liam, talk about your book.
I just love to hear you use my name over and over. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're so
it's
welcome.
New. And every time it's like, you know, gender euphoria.
But you look like Liam to me.
You do look like Liam.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm just sharing my trans joy with y'all.
I love that. Yay. Thank you. I'm going to cry. So, okay, what's the name of the book?
The name of the book is Queer Conception, the Complete Fertility Guide for Queer and Trans Parents-to-Be.
I love it. And that's a really great side book to If These Overs Could Talk, the things we learned about making an LGBTQ family.
Yep.
It looks so exciting. Can you hold it up?
Yeah.
Look at that. That's beautiful. It looks serious, but also like important and enough of the maternal. I know I'm making a lot, but it looks like a book I would pick up. And that's exciting to me.
Good. And you can see I was mid-transition when I had to approve the cover.
Right.
And I didn't know my given middle name starts with L. So I was like, well, I'll just put that in there. It'll still be my legal name. And maybe I'll just pick a name that starts with L.
Because it's your dead name on the book.
I don't.
Would you say it's your dead name?
I wouldn't say it's a dead name. So many people know me as Kristen Colley. Mm-hmm. I mean, professionally. And I don't. Kristen is not a dead name to me yet. Maybe it will be. But I'm fine with all of it.
Okay, great.
I love this so much. You're saying all the words because Erica's not a dead name. Like, I don't get mad about it. It's just, like, I feel like there was little Erica. And little Erica is great and got me to Big E, right? Like,
now
I get to be E.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Cool.
So the book is very much infused with my voice and kind of... the things that you all have been kind of recognizing in how I speak, what I speak to. There's just so much at the core of the experience of what it is to become a parent. Mm-hmm. And so that voice is infused throughout the book. And the other thing I should say is this book is inclusive of families who are using a surrogate. Mm-hmm. So like gay dads, or for whatever reason, parents don't have the reproductive capacity. So this is not just all about donor insemination for folks who are carrying. This is any kind of queer family, you know, solo parents, poly parents. Chapter one is making decisions and creating a timeline. Even just that stage of the process, some families spend years there of, are we going to do this? All the different, you know, you get decision-making fatigue before you ever even put sperm in your body. So in that decision-making chapter, I really speak to so much of what many of us are grappling with no guidance other than what we can stumble upon online. And, you know, obviously hearing other people's experiences, like on your podcast, that's informative and important. And sometimes you just need it all laid out in front of you.
Yes, truly. And we also talk a lot about LGBTQ drafting, where you just take the person in your life who's done it before you, you do exactly what they did.
Exactly.
And a lot of us in our community do that.
Yeah.
Because that's the blueprint we have and it worked. And so, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm walking that path. Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere in there, I think maybe the IVF chapter, I mentioned that. And like, you know, if you have friends who went to a certain clinic and you want to go there because they did, be sure and ask other, you know, ask deeper questions like, how did it feel to be in that clinic? Did you see images that reflected you? Were you misgendered? Was there anti-fat bias? So like ask those questions, because especially if you and your friend that you're, you know, modeling your path after don't share the same identity, or if you have different things about you, then you might be treated different than their friend was. And all of that is important. We need to expect more. So after the decision-making chapter, there's a chapter on fertile health for everybody. So it goes through fertile health of, you know, people who are making eggs, people who are carrying pregnancies, people who are producing sperm.
And I appreciate the language.
Yeah. It includes coming off of gender-affirming hormones to reclaim your fertile function in order to conceive. There's a whole chapter on lab tests and fertility evaluations. So even if you're just seeing your family practice physician or whatever provider you have in your home community, you can, you know, take this information and say, will you order these tests for me?
Right. And also, or please, I don't need that one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a whole chapter on gamete donors. We go into, you know, donor selection, known versus unknown. There's a chapter on surrogacy. And then there's a chapter on insemination methods and timing. And that chapter breaks down the methodology for identifying your ovulation within 12 hours. And it really just involves, you're using some of those same tools that y'all mentioned earlier in our conversation. You still use the ovulation predictor kit, but you keep looking for your symptoms of high estrogen after you get that surge in luteinizing hormone, because you will continue to have symptoms of high estrogen until your egg leaves the ovary.
And can you say, what are some common estrogen symptoms?
Yeah, that's a great question. Your fertile fluid, you know, when it's not fertile, it looks like some stage of Elmer's glue. And then once you're fertile, you start to have fluid that is the quality of anything from watery to raw egg white. And that raw egg white may stretch.
Yes.
The cervix will also become soft and open. And you can feel that with your fingers. It's hard to grow eyeballs in your fingertips as midwives.
Yeah, that's something I've never been able to do.
But if you do it consistently through the fertile phase for about 2 or 3 months consecutively, you know, because it only happens once a month, the changes are very subtle. So it usually takes people 2 or 3 months of tracking with their fingertips to understand those changes as they occur. But what makes it even easier, and here's where people kind of get surprised, you can use a speculum at home on your own with a flashlight and a mirror and look at your cervix. And from that perspective,
I don't know if I can do that myself.
It's not.
I never thought about looking
science.
At my own.
I've never seen my, isn't that crazy? How many of us have actually ever seen our cervix? I've never seen my cervix.
If you've seen a midwife, you probably have, because we show people all the time.
See, I've never seen a midwife.
We should know these things about our bodies. We should be empowered and central in the, in the process and in your care. Yes. And it is the changes in your cervix will be most open at ovulation time, and then it'll start closing. It'll be most soft, and there may be a position change. So even just that opening of the cervix, you can see it with your own eyes. And a lot of people are incredulous the first time they witness this change in their body. They're like, why didn't somebody teach this to me when I was growing up? Why was this not in high school biology class? This is a basic human body function.
Okay, so take us through some more.
Okay, there's a chapter on troubleshooting and complicated conceptions. You know, have you identified your best timing? Have you done all the labs? Have you paid attention to your fertile health and how you're living your life and, you know, treating your body every day? Because these things have an impact on the endocrine system and therefore on the reproductive system. I wrote a whole chapter on IVF, and the way that I organized it was I wanted to explain to people what the steps were, because I don't think that's usually explained in a way that people can really grok it. But, you know, some people are queer and doing donor insemination or surrogacy or whatever and do have difficulty conceiving. And so I wanted to have something for those families too. The next one is coping with cycle attempts. So it's a whole like how to get through this emotionally. There's a whole lot of Brené Brown in there and Sonia Renee Taylor.
Nice.
There's a chapter on miscarriage. I wanted to put that in its own chapter so people could go there if they need it and skip it if they don't. And then I insisted on including what's in chapter 11, even though really I wanted to make it a whole other book. I wanted to put something about pregnancy and lactation. And what that includes is the early weeks of pregnancy before, you know, before you can really establish care with a care provider.
Mm-hmm.
What I want people to know is folks who are inducing lactation,
mm-hmm.
whether you are a trans woman,
mm-hmm.
it's possible you can do it. Or if you were assigned female at birth and you're not carrying the pregnancy, you can also induce lactation. And I wanted that to be in this book as well, because it's best if you start that lactation induction process 3 to 6 months before the baby arrives.
Yes.
So I wanted
yes.
people to have this in their hands.
That's
okay,
really great.
Now
to
I'm
know.
Done with
That's
my
great.
List of chapters. Thank you.
No, because and we've spoken to numerous couples who have induced lactation.
Yeah.
Like when I say numerous, I mean like a small handful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that every time it comes up, we try to glean as much info as we can
mm-hmm.
from the person who did it, because like you said, it's really hard to find the information on it.
It's not for some families, it's really emotionally complex mm-hmm. to have that lactation induction happening. And I speak to that too.
I love it. I think that you have many new fans in this
absolutely.
Podcast.
Absolutely.
Because you're speaking our language, you're speaking all of our listeners' language right now, and we really appreciate it, and we need more knowledgeable folks like you in our corner.
And we needed you, so thank you.
Mm, you're welcome.
Before we sign off here, say the name of the book again, the author's name that as is written on the book, and where we can find you, where everybody can find you if they want to follow you or
okay.
be a part of your life.
The name of the book is Queer Conception, The Complete Fertility Guide for Queer and Trans Parents-to-Be by Kristen L. Colley, which will, in future reprints, it'll be Kristen Liam Colley is probably what I'll put on there. And I am based in Seattle, Washington, but I do telehealth. So you can find my practice at www.mayamidwifery.com, and that's M-A-I-A. And midwifery is spelled M-I-D-W-I-F-E-R-Y. And so what this means is you can go to my website. I can be your midwife no matter where you live. I can do everything but the IUI procedure. In terms of families who are conceiving via insemination, I can order labs anywhere in the U.S. I can meet with you, give you, you know, guidance and do your clinical preconception care. And then I also run a pregnancy program specifically for queer and trans families. There's a parallel program for solo parent families where you're able to get your education, whether it's childbirth education, lactation education, pregnancy information, while at the same time having live I've been facilitating groups for 25 years. So I facilitate the groups. I'm also training others to do what I do. So you show up at a group with a bunch of other families like yours on Zoom. We are having these robust conversations. I mean, the way you hear me talking, like this is how we do in our groups.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that goes all the way like monthly in the first part of your pregnancy. And then it's every other week. And then your baby arrives. We share birth stories, and then there's a weekly new parents group that meets. So everybody's mm-hmm. like showing up at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning, you know, pumping or nursing or bottle feeding and hopping up to change a diaper, and nobody slept last night and half the people's hair is all disheveled, including mine. And not really. I'm too big
I know.
For
I
that.
Was about to say no. That no. I bet
you can see me.
It.
You know my hair's good.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make sure it is. But, you know, I may or may not have on sweatpants. So anyway, all that to say, this is, you know, maybe this is why I was raised in the Baptist church. Like I'm proselytizing this stuff. Like I want people to hear the good news. Come to the
and
light.
We're going to do everything we can to make sure they hear the good news.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This has been really wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed my time with the two of you, and I'd be happy to come back. Let's talk more.
You're coming back. You're coming back. Oh, Liam.
Liam's so amazing.
So much information, right? Like just a well of knowledge.
Yes. And in perfect time for some folks, house or never. I wish I knew about Liam 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, E, you were like a kid in a candy shop talking to E about the transition.
Facts.
That was really wonderful to just witness your two's conversation and how excited you were to talk to somebody who's been through it and like...
And who's on tea.
Who's on tea. And it was really wonderful to watch that conversation and just see your excitement and see Liam feel, you know, like, oh, this is good. I can help. And it was just a nice moment. And that's why this podcast exists, so that people can be mirrored, you know, see themselves mirrored in these stories. So I'm just going to cry.
Oh, don't cry. But I got to tell you, the feeling of seeing, connecting with another trans person and asking questions, because we're all at different points of our journey. And, you know, I had to be told that, yes, I'm part of the trans community, because I didn't know that non-binary was part of the trans community. Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah.
Everybody needs to go out and get that book. You can check these show notes for this show here for a link, or you just go straight to Liam's website, mayamidwifery.com. That's M-A-I-A, midwifery.com. Get the book. We need to support all of us, this queer community, because we're doing good stuff in the world. I don't know.
Absolutely.
I just turned into like some.
I liked it.
All right. Well, if y'all want to help us make this content for LGBTQ families, you can join our Patreon community and you can do just that. Mm-hmm. You're going to do a good thing and you're going to get bonus content. And at the gestational carrier level, you'll get video interviews of most episodes, which are what?
Dropped a day early. Boom, boom, boom,
yes.
Boom.
So go ahead and head to our patreon.com/ovariestalk to join.
That's right. And don't forget, Jay and Robin wrote a book, right? Y'all know about the book. It's a really great book. The book is called If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making the LGBTQ Family. Mm-hmm. And it's available at all major retailers, and you should buy it. So if you want to buy it locally, go to IndieBound. Get the audiobook if you want Robin and Jay to read it to you at night. That's available on Amazon, iTunes. If you get it, don't be afraid to review it on Amazon or Goodreads. Actually, do that. Review it on Amazon or Goodreads,
Yes. We also have all kinds of merch, and Pride is the perfect time to get it. So many designs. And you can put those designs on any product in the store. T-shirts, mugs, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to a link in bio on our Instagram page, and you can get straight to the store. Or go to tpublic.com and type in ovaries, If These Ovaries Could Talk, and we'll be there. We'll be there.
Boom. Also, social media.
Don't forget to get your tickets to our live event. It's happening June 23rd at NYC Pride's The Conference. This is NYC Pride's annual symposium of transformative changemakers in the queer community. And we are one of the very special guests. And our listeners get a special discount code to attend the conference and our live taping, of course. Write it down. It's OCT15 for 15% off all conference tickets. Go do that. You got to do that. It's really cool.
Do it now.
And we just have to say thank you to our sponsor, Zoeller. And a huge thank you to all you Patreons who are helping us make this show. We really do thank you. And we apologize for rambling so much, but we just get excited when we're talking. Okay.
Should I say it? We say it together. 1, 2, 3.
Eggs.
Fridays.
Ovaries.
Out.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say. Eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.